From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of December 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, lawmakers split along party lines yesterday in regards to climate change legislation, and USDA's latest farm and ranch survey shows about 60 million farm acres are under irrigation in the United States. That's an increase of 5%. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and I'll tell you how the nation's dairy farmers are working with the NFL to promote exercise and healthy eating. And at the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby soft red winter wheat December contract down 4 3/4 at $5.49 3/4. The March at 5.71 1/2, 4 1/2 lower. In May, wheat at 5.84 1/4, down 4 1/4. July contract, the harvest month, $5.94, down 4 1/4 as well. December hard red from Kansas City settled at $5.48 1/2 on the lead option there, down 2 1/2 cents. Back in Chicago, the corn pit now, December contract, $3.85 1/4, a finish 6 1/2 cents lower. The March on a Thursday afternoon settled at $4.75 1/cent, down 5 3/4 in the May at $4.11 1/4, down 5 1/2. July futures, 420, down 5 1/4. September corn at 426 3/4, down 4 3/4. And December futures for next year at $4.33 3/4, down 4 1/4. December oats down 1 3/4 at $2.49 3/4. Soy complex January beans, 1047, 13 cents higher. March on the settlement price at 1054 1/2, up 13 1/2. In the May, 1061, up 15 cents. July soybeans, $10.67, up 14 3/4. The August at 1063 3/4, up 14 1/4. November beans at 1047, 15 1/2 cents higher. December bean meal at 321.50, up 4.20. December bean oil unchanged at 39.75. From the livestock side, nearby December live cattle at $80.80, $1.30 lower. January feeders at $93.10, 85 cents lower. And December lean hogs at $59.25, down 42 1/2 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, January contract, $76.46, down 14 cents. Ethanol, December futures, $2.13, unchanged on the day. Natural gas at $4.46 3/10, down 6 7/10. The RBOB at $1.99 3/10, just about unchanged. Heating oil futures at $2.04 8/10 a cent, up 1 1/10 of a cent. And the gold contract at $1,217.40, finished $5.40 higher on the afternoon. The Dow now stands at 10,441. It's just about 11 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 74.63 is down 0.03, and the CRB index for the day at 276.56 is down 0.24 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, with a little update from Mike Sola. They say tonight in the north, cloudy, scattered snow showers and flurries. In central and southern sections, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 17 in west central Illinois to 27 in southeastern parts of Indiana. And then tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy skies, a few scattered flurries. In central and southern sections, partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 26 in far northwestern Illinois to 38 in the far south. The extended forecast says cold weather continues right on through Saturday, with highs mostly in the 30s and lows in the teens and the 20s. And then on Sunday, the high should range from the 30s north to the 40s in the south. Temps next week likely to remain near to below average, with highs most days ranging from the 30s north to the 40s in the south and lows mostly in the 20s. Drier weather expected Saturday and Sunday, with scattered showers of rain as we make it through the following weekend. More on the agriculture weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this hour and we talk with Pete Levitt.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Leonard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, is on the phone line with us today to take up the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
It's an interesting time, I think, at least when you start to look at the charts just a bit, trying to discover which way the marketplace, although there's quite a bit of doldrum in the market as far as movement goes, I think in large part because, well, everything's backed up now just a bit. What do you see in the marketplace?
Well, I think you start, you know, fundamentally, the corn market is the weakest link, at least for the time being here. I mean, export demand has been real sluggish all fall. We had another dismal week here of export sales. You know, country movement activity is picking up here as we're, you know, finally getting maybe to the last 2 weeks of harvest, depending upon, you know, how much rain or snow we get here next week. But it looks like we got another week or two yet in many of the areas. So you're starting to see some, you know, movement into the pipeline because everybody is filling up.
And then if you take a look at the chart for corn, are you still thinking that this was... Well, which direction do you think we're headed? It's been kind of a sideways run for a bit now. Can we continue to move sideways, or will it have to break one way or the other?
Well, my guess is we're going to break one way or the other. I mean, the chart formations that I look basically at the moment still favor maybe a push to the upside, but we need to kind of get that job done here in the next week or two, or otherwise I think it's going to fail. For the time being here with yesterday's weakness and today's weakness, we are now, we kind of closed down against a little uptrend line, basically drawn off of the October or the early November low here, about 372 on the March corn futures. So the corn market, at least from a technical perspective, looking at some of these short-term trend lines, needs to kind of hold in here. At current levels tomorrow, maybe come back, close good, you know, put a good weekly close in. But the way things are shaping up, we could end up closing the week lower, which would not necessarily be a good sign. But a lot of it is the time of year. We do have, you know, December contract getting ready to expire here in another week. A week from Monday, I think it goes off the board. You also get into December, you get into a lot of people wanting to close out positions. You got people wanting to put on new positions. So you get a lot of false technical signals during the month of December, and I think this is the case that we're seeing here today.
Well, if you look at the marketplace on the tech side, what do you see as an upside potential in it at this point if it were to break up? If we were to break to the top side, and how would we know that? Would we have to go above 412 in expiration on December, or are we looking at the March contract?
Well, I'm looking at the March contract for all practical purposes. It's the functional contract here since December is in deliveries.
Right.
March has a kind of a double top formation in it, right, in this 4.25 area. So in order to really confirm any kind of technical breakout, we need to go on up and plow through that double top formation. If we would plow through that double top formation, a lot of technicians will probably look at the chart pattern and say we probably could add 50 cents as a potential upside target. So that would kind of put us up into that, you know, 475, 480 level as an upside potential. At this time, I don't see the fundamentals in play to make that happen. I think if that would come to realization, it would probably have to come from a collapse, a total collapse in the dollar from where we're at from current levels, I think, Todd.
And then on the flip side, for the downside, I assume, and you can tell me that I'm wrong, that it's hard for to book trains, that there's an awful lot of grain that's been moving, and that we're so late in the season that the trying to move the grain around has become a problem, for a logistical problem for the industry, and that's created the weaker tone in the basis. Is that right or wrong?
Well, no, they're able to move stuff around. I mean, everything's been on a delayed basis. I mean, basically what we're experiencing now, I think, is what we normally experience during, you know, first half of November. We're just, a whole month behind on harvest. We got started off a month late, and that's pretty well held through throughout the growing season. So we're probably more in the late October and early November time frame as harvest is beginning to wrap up. Things are beginning to fill out. That's probably more than anything. We haven't had any harvest pressure to speak of all fall, and I think now is probably we're beginning to see some of that hedge pressure, harvest pressure come into play.
Would that give you hope for a post-harvest rally like we would have in the early December time frame and sometime in early January?
Well, seasonally, I mean, if you look at the longer-term seasonal patterns, I mean, you go from a growing season high to a fall harvest low, and once you get the fall harvest low in place, generally speaking, the market trends sideways to higher as you go on into the new crop growing season. I'm a little concerned, I think, longer term, because I look at, you know, when you look at past years when we had major spikes in the marketplace like we had in 2008, it usually takes a couple years to wring out all of that bullishness. So you usually make a pretty good low 2 years after you make a spike high. So I'm a little concerned as we go into 2010 that 2010 may be one of those years everything kind of drags and chugs along and works lower as we go into the new crop growing season.
Mm-hmm. We're running short on time, but why did soybeans rally today?
Soybeans still, people are still talking about demand, even though the weekly export sales were a shade disappointing when they look at the overall total complex sales. When you look at soybean meal sales, soybean oil sales, you have to just stay generally positive soybeans. So soybeans were able to kind of regroup, and you also got to remember that they were down 25 cents yesterday, so they kind of got ahead of corn, I think. So what we saw here is corn lost additional ground, and soybeans kind of gained back some of their ground they left yesterday.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwickers with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He'll take us through all the agricultural news for the afternoon. Just a quick reminder, if you'd like to hear what Dan had to say again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to the programs directly from the website. Sign up to have them delivered to your computer by podcast. And you can, well, if you'd like, dial this phone number to hear it again as well, 217-333-3434. That's 333-3434. It's an answering machine, basically, that we put the numbers in the podcast on.
In agricultural news, lawmakers divided largely along party lines yesterday at a House hearing on agriculture and climate change, while USDA's chief economist tried to stress that while climate change legislation would increase costs to producers, those expenses would be gradual over several decades. The House bill, the American Clean Energy and Security Act, would reduce carbon emissions 17% by 2020 and up to 83% by 2050. In the hearing, Republicans gave a blistering review of what would be expected under the legislation, with Representative Bob Goodlatte calling ACES the agriculture can't exist standard. Testifying for USDA, the department's chief economist, Joe Glauber, said there is no question agriculture is energy intensive and will be affected. But responding to a question about how farmers deal with higher costs, Glauber says, quote, they are very gradual impacts, and for the next 12 to 15 years, they are very small. USDA's 2008 Farm and Ranch Survey has found that farmers and ranchers are now irrigating 54.9 million acres of farmland across the U.S., an increase of nearly 5% since 2003. During the five-year period since the last irrigation survey, the area irrigated by sprinkler systems increased 15%, while the area with gravity irrigation decreased 5%. Related to irrigation equipment, facilities, land improvements, and computer technology. For the first time, NASS also gathered information on the use of recycled and reclaimed water. A total of 9,843 farms reported using recycled water and 3,205 used reclaimed water. A new farm bill program, originally projected to cost $70 million over 5 years, will cost taxpayers $514 million by the end of March. That's how much in interim funding the White House Office of Management and Budget has allocated USDA to pay for the Biomass Crop Assistance Program until a final rule is in place. As written in the 2008 Farm Bill, a provision dealing with the collection, harvest, storage, and transportation of biomass has no statutory funding cap. The Farm Bill stated USDA can use such sums as are necessary to administer the program. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear online anytime you'd like at willag.org. You can sign up there to have them delivered to your computer automatically as a podcast, too. It's all at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says technology is needed to help feed the world.
Feeding the world in 2050 is going to be a big job, and the World Summit on Food Security clearly pointed out that job must be accomplished through reliance of technology. In order to accomplish this, technology must increase production by 70%. Is the world ready for the next green revolution? The first green revolution took place in the mid-1960s, but it really had its start in 1945. Technology developed for wartime quickly found peacetime uses. Mechanical technology was adapted to increase efficiency. Scientists use chemical technology to improve both plant and animal health. Communication innovations improved our ability to give people useful news and information to adopt these changes. Today, we do not need 20 years to gear up. Achieving the next green revolution should just be an outgrowth of the technology changes that began in 1945. One such technology, crops developed through biotechnology, offer the option of providing higher yields while conserving resources such as water, energy, and land. And after 15 years of use in many countries, biotechnology has been shown to reduce the need for pesticides. However, there are areas of the world where knowledge and willpower to overcome pressure from activist groups is not strong enough. Extreme activists have pressured politicians to ban biotech seeds. They have frightened consumers and farmers with unsubstantiated claims. This is the case in much of Africa. If there is a place on Earth that needs biotechnology, it is Africa. The United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization estimates that the use of biotech crops and fertilizer could increase productivity in areas of the continent by 150 to 700%. Africa is not the only place being held back by naysayers. Governments in much of Europe, many countries in Asia, and parts of Australia have chosen to shackle farmers' productivity and use of biotechnology. Fortunately, there is a groundswell of farmers and scientists who are beginning to stand up and say they need biotech crops to not only feed their families, but also feed the world. Just a few weeks ago, Britain's Royal Society noted that it will take high-tech crops to help solve the problem of hunger. If the world is committed to fighting hunger, it must look for more biotechnology. It must look for willpower. Technology advancements for the next green revolution are underway. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochka's comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-9697. Up next, the National Dairy Council and the National Football League have teamed up to motivate school-aged children. I'll have more on the Fuel Up to Play 60 program.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Fuel Up to Play 60 is a new youth program sponsored by the National Dairy Council and the National Football League, or the NFL. It's supposed to empower students to take action for their health and their school environment, says Tammy Larson, School Nutrition Program Manager for the Midwest Dairy Council.
The program is focused on student-led initiatives to make their school environment healthier. And with those students leading, they also inspire their peers to do the same thing, make healthier options available in the school, make healthier choices, and increase their physical activity.
The students start, says Larson, by taking an assessment of their school and its environment. About 60,000 schools are expected to participate in the program, so that assessment will be a massive undertaking in total. Once the kids have done their assessments, Larson says they'll choose from a series of strategies to address the problems. It's the Dairy Council, so we're talking about nutritional problems.
Well, what we're trying to do is provide more nutrient-rich foods for the students. And sometimes there's so many options out there that they may not be choosing the right foods. So through education and through new products and innovative ideas, we're trying to incorporate more dairy products and more nutrient-rich foods in general.
Fuel Up to Play 60 does this in a couple of ways. First, it involves the kids, the parents, and the teachers in a learning program to assess eating habits and to help them all make better nutritional choices, including low-fat or fat-free dairy foods, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. The 60 part is getting 60 minutes of exercise before, during, and after school. The students will track their progress and the school's progress online and compete for prizes. The student grand prize is hanging out for a day with an NFL player. The school grand prize is a cafeteria and gym makeover. All of the details are online at www.fueluptoplay60.com. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. An 11-year-old girl who died this week in Loudoun may have been infected with a bacterial disease similar to meningitis. Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup says evidence of a bacterial blood infection was found in the body of Natalie Johnson. She was a sixth grader at Paxton Buckley Loudoun Junior High School and died Tuesday. Health officials say Johnson's family was given antibiotics to help curb any spread of the bacteria. Northrup says some test results are still outstanding. A backlog of payments faced by the state is starting to concern administrators at the University of Illinois. Interim President-designate Stanley Eikenberry says the university is still waiting for more than $388 million in state funding that would normally have been received by now. But he says the U of I has essentially been unpaid since the start of the fiscal year. Eikenberry says the financial crisis on campus hasn't been as severe as what leaders at Southern Illinois University have experienced because of revenue coming from outside enterprises and research grants to the U of I. Republican candidate for Illinois governor is suggesting 10% cuts across the board for each area of state government. Bloomington Senator Bill Brady used a campaign stop in Champaign today to tout his plans for reining in government spending. He says by having the state live within its means, the savings created by those cuts would generate about $5 billion. Brady's also calling for $1 billion in tax cuts and credits for small businesses to keep them from leaving the state. Brady also today received the endorsement of 14 of his Republican colleagues, including Representatives Shane Coulter of Onaga and Bill Mitchell of Forsyth. Healthcare professionals are now starting a 24-hour-a-day hotline to answer Illinois residents' questions about swine flu. Illinois Department of Public Health and the State Poison Center are teaming up on the project. English and Spanish lines are available. The hotline is 866-848-2094. The new operator of Champaign's provider of independent and foreign language films promises to keep them coming to town. Sanford Hess will take over Borgman's Art Theater on Church Street at the first of the year. Greg Borgman operated the facility the past six, but his lease expires December 31st, and he and theater owner David Kraft couldn't come to terms on agreement rent payments. Hess's lease of the theater, simply called the Art Theater, next year runs for 3 years. I'm Jeff Bossert.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt joins us, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Looks like the weather is going to turn cold enough to, well, hold a four-wheel drive tractor up, I think.
Yes, and though from I think what you told me earlier, that some farmers are antsy enough to want to get out there and get it in, probably might have done a little better by waiting a little longer if it was possible, because the ground will finally harden up over the next this coming week, and the weeks thereafter it'll be hard enough to sustain heavy equipment and probably save the problem of rutting the soil out and doing some damage, making next year's pre-planting quite a chore.
Indeed it will. So tell me about this weather forecast. It looks like temps in the highs will not be particularly high, though I don't remember how close they will be to average. Looks like maybe a bit below average, and it'll be pretty cool at night.
They'll average a little below normal across central Illinois. Maxes will probably be in the mid to up at 30s. Maybe we'll catch a 40 or so on Sunday. The lows will be down in the 20s, except Saturday morning we could see some of the upper teens across Illinois and western Indiana. And then temperatures holding in there with not much in the way of weather, maybe a few flurries from time to time, mostly extreme northern areas, as we're in a region of what we call cyclonic flow, unstable flow of cold air, and that will generate a few afternoon or evening snow showers. However, not much in the way of accumulation. Then we get some more precipitation on Monday. Temperatures holding in the daytime, temperatures in the 30s, nighttime in the 20s. Some of that will be snow. Tuesday, Wednesday, again, one more shot of precipitation then. And then even colder weather comes the end of next week, and we should be getting days that will actually stay below freezing all day toward the latter part of next week, with the overnight lows in the low to mid-teens. So we are seeing winter coming on. It's finally here. The cold air is coming down in the western half of the country right now. It'll gradually shift eastward over the next 5 to 7 days, and then we'll start seeing some of that colder weather in here. And we can now look at our winter season as a real winter season.
Yeah, so let's stay in the northern hemisphere for just a second.
Uh-huh.
Hard red winter wheat or winter wheat crops in the west here, and then in Ukraine. Ukraine really hasn't been hardened up, I don't think, for its dormancy. Are they going to face a problem anytime soon?
Yeah, they will. It's going to be a little bit like what you've seen in Illinois, only it's coming from the other direction over there in Western Asia. They have been a little too mild to winter harden the crop there, and they are going to start turning colder from north to south and northeast to southwest over this next week, as we finally see some of that Siberian air start to work southward and westward into a southwestern FSU or the Ukraine area. And that's probably a little too early for them. They should have gotten a little colder earlier to be ready for it. But I don't think it's damaging at this time. It's just not the most ideal situation.
All right. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
That's Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what he had to say again, you can do that on our website. The address, willag.org. Don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter there. Just hit subscribe on the right-hand side of the page. You can get off that newsletter subscription just as easily as you get on. Just hit unsubscribe. It's all at WILL, AG.org. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.